think, isn't it? Does it sound like it was cutting out? No? Okay. Well, we can make it do that.
I was at the Cornerstone Cafe the other day. Little business plug. I was at the Cornerstone Cafe the other day. And some of you know Jane. How many of you know Jane? What? I don't even remember her last name. What's her last name? Jane? No. Jane with the blonde hair. Smith. Gee, wonder why I couldn't remember her name. Jane Smith. One of those distinctive names, you know? She's, yeah. And her friend John Doe. Yeah, Jane Smith. And her daughter Sarah says to me, looks at me, she goes, "Have you seen the Titanic?" I'm like, "No, I think it sank." She's like, "Oh, that's terrible. No, the movie." And I'm like, "No, I haven't seen that movie. I'm not going to see the movie. I don't want to see the movie. I'm sick of hearing about the movie. We all know what happens. It sinks. Okay? That's why I'm not going to see the movie. I already know the story. I don't want to watch it happen for 3 hours. It probably took less time than that to go down in the first place, you know? This time it takes... Does anybody know how long did it take for it to go? 2 hours, see? Now it takes 2 hours for the ship to sink, 3 hours to film it. Something wrong with that. But anyway... they start before it starts sinking. Okay, thank you. So that it really drags out for you, huh? You know? I hate movies like that. I despise them with everything in me. It's like, no, I'm not going to see the movie because it's one of those... There's like mystery movies, whodunits, slashers, and then this whole genre of film that I just term frustration movies. No? Yeah, love stories. Frustration movies, same thing.
While the marrieds are away, we will commiserate.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's love stories. Bah, humbug. Bah. Yeah. The Christmas Carol. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, you're here solo today, so you can commiserate for a while.
But yeah, you're a spy from the marrieds. But I hate those. You know, like there was that one Honeymoon in Las Vegas. Was that, you guys? That wasn't like, huh? Is that the one? Or is it Leaving Las Vegas? There's Leaving Las Vegas, and there's one where they're trying to travel across the United States for their honeymoon or something like this, and the lady like loses all of the money in Vegas and end up just declining. What was that? Lost in America. There you go. Horrific film. You know, I had to cover my eyes most of the time, you know? Or Planes, Trains, Automobiles. You know? There's nothing more seared in my mind than this image of these guys driving this Plymouth K car that's burned. I mean, just burned to the ground in the snow. Thinking that, I hate that. I absolutely despise that. Possibly because, you know, I resonate with it so well. And I thought it was very ironic the way this morning's music went. But oh well, that works, okay? The Lord goes, "Well, I'll give you a real illustration." There is one particular frustration movie that I hate more than any other frustration movie. It is the classic frustration movie. The Music Box. Have you seen that? The Music Box? Laurel and Hardy trying to get a piano up of a flight of stairs. It's like... It's just this one huge flight of stairs. And they arrive, they're piano movers, and they're trying to get this thing up, and no matter what they do, it keeps... Have you seen that movie? I hate it. I hate that movie. How long is it? It's like 15 minutes long, isn't it? It's horrible. It is horrible. Of course, like...
I'm sorry, I had to try to. I didn't mean to bust the music box.
You know? And I'm thinking, it's good. And there's Dan Ledbetter going, hmm. You know? So, for those of you who've seen it, you'll know that it's 15 minutes of utter horror as they keep trying to lift this piano up these flights of steps. Somewhere on the outskirts of LA. And It keeps boom, ba-boom, 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 ba-boom. And every time they turn around, pick up a hat, do something else, it falls down. They finally get it up to this mansion. They have to break down the door, basically, to get it in. They get it in. They try to put it up. It falls through. They're ending up sitting in this just destroyed building with a destroyed piano. Everything's crushed, and there's plaster powder on their hairs. It's like, you know, that's another fine mess. And all of a sudden, it's like, I don't know, sorry, that's somewhere between Beaker and Laurel, you know.
I'm Professor Honeydew. This is my assistant, Stan Laurel.
You know, and what's the very last scene? Does anybody remember? What's the very last scene of the music box? The owner comes in from where? From the front door, to which he drove up. He had been the whole time taking this thing up to get it to the back door, you know? All of this frustration when they could have just driven right to the front door, unloaded the thing. And so it's this it's an insult to injury thing, yes. It's just frustrating. And I hate the movie. Other people just love it. But I just see that kind of angst for no reason as just wasted film, you know? But again, like I say, that's because I think I resonate with it.
What?
No giggling. It makes the preacher nervous, okay? If you giggle in the middle, it makes me self-conscious. Okay. Everything's fine. You have no idea what it's like. I mean, when you're up here, it's like, where do my hands go? Did I tie my shoe? What are they laughing at, you know? And God forbid that you don't use the restroom ahead of time, but never mind. You guys can walk out. But a lot of times, life is like the music box there, where we work and work and work at a very frustrating proposition when the simplest answer is right in front of our faces. It's just sitting there, you know, like the front door. We go through destruction and loss and angst and frustration and pain and expended effort, pushing our lives up these steps, you know, bum 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 bum, you know. And then there's the front door, and we're like, why didn't I just go in at the front door? I often think of Jonah's journey to Nineveh that he took, you know, he took the long way around. Like, not the most comfortable bus in the world. He should have flown United or whatever. And there's this, along that line, there is this story that Jim Baldwin loves to tell that I just think is great. You may have heard it before, but oh well. You can be bored. But there was a, I believe it was some sort of a liquid transport truck, like a fuel truck or something like that, that was going under a bridge. And this bridge was not marked with the height marker, or the driver could not see the clearance marker. And so this trucker drove at like 50, 60 miles an hour into this bridge. And got a semi stuck inside of a bridge. Okay? Stuck. Just tight. Puts it in reverse. You know, nothing but smoke. Forward. Nothing but smoke. Stuck. All the traffic having to go. Stuck both sides. They can't get this thing out. They just, you know, he's like, I don't know. They try towing it. It just jammed in tighter. They try pulling out the other way. You know, and the fluid's like, blah, 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 blah. So they were busy getting ready to break the bridge when this little kid walked up and goes, why don't you let the air out of the tires?
Well, we thought about that. It's toxic air. Can't do it. Somebody get the kid out of here.
Let the air out of the tires. That's what they ended up doing. They just let the air out of the tires, backed it right out. Thump, 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 thump.
You know?
Simple solutions to complex problems, you know? And I think, man, is that our lives. We're like, cruise along, da da da, not paying attention. Boom. And we try all these exotic solutions with the wrong approach. When it could be just as simple as going, you know?
Try that next time in your life. Next time you're feeling pressure, you're feeling stuck, just go, it works. This is, what a day, huh? Here we go.
It reminds me of, I'm a Star Trek fan. Sorry. I like sci-fi. It's like brain candy, you know? And there's this old Star Trek, Wrath of Khan, you know? You've seen Star Trek Wrath of Khan? And what it is that there's two disabled starships and they're in this big cloud and they're chasing each other and, you know, it's this slow-moving battle. And they're trying to figure out what to do, and Spock, in his inimitable way, says, you know, Captain, Khan's strategies reflect two-dimensional thinking.
Like, cool.
He's thinking 2D like it's a plane. Then the scene shows his ship coming, and this other one pulls up behind it.
3D thinking,
and they win. It's like, yay, yay, just because they thought in cubes, you know? Simple. But when you're there and you're blocked and you can only see the thing right in front of you, it's not quite so easy. You're thinking, okay, I'm doing this the right way. I'm searching my grid, you know? I'm going along my grid, and I'm not... But you're not thinking 3D, you're thinking 2D. You're just getting wasted. You're going, ah, something's wrong with this picture, I don't know what. I did an experiment. Actually, it was more of an illustration. We did this... I was talking on values and what's really important in your life and the fact that your life is... You're all in the process of dying. Some of you are just doing it faster than others, right? So that's why I drink coffee. Accelerate the process. Get to heaven earlier. And I was talking about, imagine, and this was the way to start out. I said, imagine your house is burning. What is the one thing you take with you? What's the first thing you grab? Yeah? This guy goes, a fire extinguisher. Went, you're a jerk. You know? He's just ruined my whole illustration, but pretty smart, you know? The guy was a cook. He was a professional chef, so of course he thinks fire extinguisher, all nice. You know, everybody else is like, oh, I grab my child, oh, you know, I grab, you know, I leave my child, I grab my dog, you know, I grab my, you know. Yeah, sorry. I thought, oh, just the context. Sometimes you're thinking the house is on fire, I'm going to grab the thing most valuable to me instead of the thing which would actually help, which would be a fire extinguisher. Hello. And not only that, but what kind of a fire extinguisher? Ever, you know those old ones? You know those, right? Have you guys ever seen the ABC? Do they still use ABC, any firemen here? They still use ABC. What's ABC?
You gotta know your ABCs.
ABC. Yeah. What's the first one, wood, paper, what? And what's in it? Baking soda and? Water. Fireman. Okay, good. Why do you have to have those designations? Yes, because if you put the wrong thing on the wrong approach on the right solution, you know, wrong solution on the right approach. Okay? Like, what happens if you spray bleach in an electrical outlet? What do you do for a living, Pete? Fireman. Yeah, this man knows. He's a fireman.
So. I did that on purpose.
It was a laboratory. There you go. Yeah. So you have to have the right approach to the problem and the right, you know, it's like the little kids matching games, you know? You have this problem. If you are hungry, what do you need?
Food, ungawa.
Okay. All right. If you are thirsty, what do you need? Coffee. Coffee. You know, film like, just put coffee on all the above. If you're tired, what do you need? If you're depressed, what do you need? All right, great. Go to the cornerstone, you know? It's like, this sermon from our sponsors, Cornerstone Cafe. Sad. See, all solutions, you know. But if you're hungry, you need food. If you're thirsty, you need water, you know, coffee. Yeah, you need... water slash coffee. I don't really trust the municipal water. It's not really safe. So you have to boil the water and then filter it through a roasted organic filter, you see. I prefer to use beans, ground beans, as an organic filter to absorb all of the impurities from the municipal water and yield pure joy. So, yeah, you have to have these concomitant responses, right? Now, we're going to run a little test here. Over the last few weeks, we have been dealing with giving the more earnest heed to our faith, and particularly spiritual conflict in the middle of that. I want you, these are just a couple of like everyday life scenarios. We're going to try to apply this to our lives to make it applicable and relevant because we're, you know, this is the 90s. And so here's a couple of scenarios from your life. Do you guys have pens? Anybody with pens? Pens. Pens, then make a mental log. If you have a pen, share it, write it on your bulletin, write it on the back. That's why there's, yes, it's a little paper thing they give you. It's like an extended Bible bookmarker. There we go. Collect all colors. You can scribble it on there. Just put the appropriate response, what do you need in this situation? Bills. And write it down. Don't shout out, just write it down. Bills. How about particularly taxes? You're writing what you need in order to fix it. Okay? You can't pay your taxes, what do you need? Okay, just write it down. Your friend is arrested and calls you from jail. What do you need? Coffee. Oh, I'm never going to live this one down. Okay? Now, let's change it a little bit here. We'll say that there's a bill facing Congress because of political correctness. The Christians will no longer be allowed to share their faith or to condemn any other sort of either behavior or other faith stance, as is the case in Sydney, is it not, Adam Ryan? It's illegal to publicly condemn another person's faith or lifestyle. It's considered oppression. So what do you need in that situation?
No. Fire.
No. What do you need? The bill is in front of Congress. What do you need to do? Hey, write it down. A little bit easier. Okay, most of us here are single since the marrieds are all away. Some of us, how many of you are engaged here? A few engaged couples, right? Okay, one, two, any others? Three, any others? Where's the sound man? Hello, sound man, you're engaged, I know that. That's my roommate. We'll say you're engaged, Chris. Okay? You're engaged. Mark and Michelle. And the morning of your wedding, the caterer calls you. He says, I totally lost your order. We have plans to cater for the governor of California today, and sorry, we're just not going to make it. We'll refund your deposit in 60 days. What do you need? Okay, write a lawyer. Yeah, write it down.
Okay? We have to throw one in here, El Nino. Okay? You live on a hillside, live on a hillside in Laguna Beach. The water is pouring down, or better yet, like where I live now, the water is just pouring. They broke down a fence, went through the house, they like opened the doors, you know, the water's like going through their house because they're afraid that it would collapse a wall. So they opened the doors to release the pressure, going through their house going, well, there goes my cat. there it is. Okay, now, El Nino hits, you're on a hillside, the water's pouring down, all the land around you is starting to just look like a big old Carl's Jr. milkshake, okay? It's just like, blah, blah, blah. What do you need? Hey, write it down. Coffee. Worst case scenario now. Worst case scenario. Remember the movie Red Dawn? Yeah. Wolverines, Wolverines! Every teenage, overblown, testosterone-driven male loved that movie. It's like, yeah. Hey, Red Dawn was this scenario played during the Cold War. I remember back during the Cold War. We all had to wear a coach to school, afraid of them communists because of the Cold War. There's a resurrected Soviet Empire, and they're poised. They take over Canada, and they're poised to invade the United States. What do you need? Okay, write it down. Good. Since this is interactive church this morning, what the heck? We're going to do something kind of interesting, huh? What is this? What is this? What is this? All right. I need 5 volunteers. Okay, sir, ma'am, all right, ma'am, sir, okay, you, sir, right here, Matthew 17:24, okay, Acts 12:1-17, here, John 2,
John Duke.
What, number one? Who is our other volunteer here? There we are, right on. How about Luke, chapter 8, verses 22 through 25. We're going to do interactive Bible here. All right. Sir, stand up, read it out. Matthew 17, let's see. I'm going to have to give you a couple of verses because it starts in Matthew 17, 24. Matthew 17, 24 and following. So just start reading there. I'll tell you when to stop. I think the point will be abundantly clear. Drachma, yeah. What does Jesus need? Go ahead. Actually, okay, thank you. That's good. Now, that is weird. The IRS man calls you and he says, you know, there's a little discrepancy here on our forms, and you owe this many dollars. Say, okay, just hang on, I gotta go fishing. Hand me my line, you know. You owe taxes, what do you need? A fishing pole. You know, here's the funny thing, right? Peter did what for a living? Fish. It would make sense if Jesus told Peter to go fishing, he meant what? Go get fish, sell them, make the money. But Jesus decides to take the shortcut. He says, no, get an angle, an
You know? He says, go get a hook and line. It's very specific here as opposed to your normal net thing. And go throw the hook out, catch one fish, slit it open, and sell the money. You know, just take the money. Just like, oh, yeah, okay, here's my, you know, Rolex watch, needed one. Bizarre. Totally bizarre. Now, think about your own situation. Are taxes coming up? Yes? Yes? Okay. If you owed taxes, what would be your first reaction? I need to go make money in the way that I typically make money. I need to go work. I need to go make money. As opposed to, you know, go duck hunting. Take the first duck, pull out the Rolex watch, hawk it, and say, you know, sell it, pay the taxes. Bizarre. Bizarre. You would think, yeah, I would need a lottery ticket. Next one. X12. Yes, please do.
It was about this time that King Herod arrested John, put to death on the sword. Also, this happened during the feast of unleavened bread. After the arrest, he was put in prison. He was brought to the
This is great. So an angel appears. Ah, hey.
Get up.
Now, what does Peter need at this point? Coffee. He needs coffee. You see? Now think about this. Think about this. Okay, you're laying there in the middle of the night. You're in jail.
Hey, Dad, I'm in jail.
You know, I like it here. Whatever. He's in jail. Angel, if you're there in jail, you're sleeping. You know, rattle, rattle, clank, clank. You wake up. There's an angel kicking you, going, hey, 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 wake up. What are you gonna think? Drug induced. This has been one stressful day. He says, get up, put your shoes on. Like, why not? Put them on, you fall them out, you're like, okay, this is interesting. I need coffee. Keep going. He woke up and smelt. Yeah, there we go. Good. Keep going.
Came to the door.
She said, "Hi." No. Where's Mary? No, keep going. That's because that's why I stopped watching TV. Keep going. So your friend's in jail. What do you need? What did you write down? Bail bond, money, lawyer. What do they need? Really, pretty simple, isn't it? If your friend's in jail, you pray. And then when he appears at your front door, you think, it's the angel. No, he dropped him off. His angel's gone. Next. Who is our next? Go ahead. Can everybody hear?
No.
You got to turn and face them and yell. Yell. Good, good. You got to yell. Go for it. Ceremonial. Miracles. That's fine. Capernaum. Yeah. Okay, so the caterer doesn't show up for your wedding. What do you need? You need Jesus. Your friend's in jail, what do you need? Jesus. You can't pay your taxes, what do you need? Was that our first response? Next one, please. The Bible. Just start at Genesis. Go all the way to the end. Luke 8, 22 through 25. Go for it. Luke 8, 22 through 25. Thank you. Cool. So El Nino strikes. You're on the side of the hill. Your house is sliding down. Everything is wet. Everything is a mess. What do you need? Jesus. See, very often we have complex solutions to our problems when we could just do the front door. Settle in and listen here for a moment. Think of Red Dawn.
Wolverines.
This is kind of a long story, but it's kind of fun. In the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. Bam! Gone. And the king of Assyria, thank you,
I need coffee,
sent the Rabshakeh, which is a cool name, sent the Rabshakeh from Lachish to King Hezekiah at Jerusalem with a great army. And he stood by the conduit of the upper pool on the highway to the fuller's field, and there came out to him Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the secretary, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder. And the Rabshakeh said to them, "Say to Hezekiah, thus says the great king, the king of Assyria, on what do you rest this confidence of yours? Do you think that mere words are a strategy or power for war? On whom do you now rely that you have rebelled against me? Behold, you're relying on Egypt, that broken reed of a staff, which will pierce the hand of any man who leans on it. Such is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all who rely on him. But if you say to me, 'We rely on Yahweh our God,' is it not he whose high places and altars Hezekiah has removed, saying to Judah and to Jerusalem, 'You shall worship before this altar'? Come now, make a wager with my master, the king of Assyria. I'll give you 2,000 horses if you're able for your part to put riders on them. How then can you repulse a single captain among the least of my master's servants when you rely on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Moreover, is it without Yahweh that I have come up against this land to destroy it? Yahweh said to me, 'Go up against this land and destroy it.'" Then Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah said to the Rabshakeh, "Pray, speak to your servants in Aramaic, for we understand it, and don't speak to us in the language of Judah within the hearing of the people who are on the wall." But the Rabshakeh said, "Has my master sent me to speak these words to your master and to you, and not to the men sitting on the wall who are doomed with you to eat their own dung and drink their own urine?" This guy's kind of arrogant. Then the Rabshakeh stood and called out in a loud voice in the language of Judah, "Hear the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus says the king, 'Don't let Hezekiah deceive you, for he will not be able to deliver you. Don't let Hezekiah make you rely on the Lord by saying, "The Lord will surely deliver us." This city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Don't listen to Hezekiah, for thus says the king of Assyria, make your peace, come out to me. Then every one of you will eat his own vine, and every one of you will of his own fig tree, and every one of you will drink the water of his own cistern, till I come and take you to a land like your own, a land of grain, of wine, of bread, and vineyards. Beware lest Hezekiah mislead you by saying, 'The Lord will deliver us.' Has any of the gods of the nations delivered them out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim? Have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? Who among all the gods of these countries had delivered their countries out of my hand that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand?" But they were silent and answered him not a word, for the king's command was, "Don't answer him." Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, and Shebna, the secretary, and Joah, the son of Asaph, the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their clothes rent and told him the words of the Rabshakeh. When King Hezekiah heard it, he rent his clothes and covered himself with sackcloth and went into the house of the Lord. And he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, and Shebna, the secretary, and the senior priest, clothed with sackcloth, to the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz. And they said to him, "Thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of distress, of rebuke, and of disgrace. Children have come to birth, and there is no strength to bring them forth. It may be that the Lord your God heard the words of the Rabshakeh, whom his master, the king of Assyria, has sent to mock the living God, and will rebuke the words which the Lord your God has heard. Therefore, lift up your prayer for the remnant that is left." Then the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah, or when the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah, Isaiah said to them, "Say to your master, 'Thus says the Lord, don't be afraid, because of the words that you've heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria have reviled me. Behold, I will put a spirit in him, so that he shall hear a rumor and return to his own land, and I'll make him fall by the sword in his own land.'" The Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria fighting against Libna, for he had heard that the king had left Lachish. Now the king heard concerning Tirhakah, king of Ethiopia, he sent out to fight against you. When he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah, saying, "Thus shall you speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah. Don't let your God on whom you rely deceive you by promising that Jerusalem will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Behold, you have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all lands, destroying them utterly. And shall you be delivered? Have the gods of the nations delivered them? The gods or the nations which my fathers destroyed, Gozan, Haran, Rezeph, the people of Eden who were in Telasar? Where is the king of Hamath, the king of Arpad, the king of the city of Sepharvaim, the king of Hena, the king of Iva?" Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers and read it. Hezekiah went up to the house of the Lord and spread it before the Lord. "O Lord of hosts, God of Israel, who art enthroned above the cherubim, thou art the God. Thou alone, of all the kingdoms of the earth, thou hast made heaven and earth. Incline thine ear, O Lord, and hear. Open thy eyes, O Lord, and see. And hear all the words of Sennacherib, which he has sent to mock the living God. Of a truth, O Lord, the kings of Assyria have laid waste all the nations and their lands, and have cast their gods into the fire. For they were no gods, but the work of men's hands, wood and stone, therefore they're destroyed. So now, O Lord our God, save us from his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou alone art the Lord. The Lord sends back a prophecy and says, basically, I wave thumb my nose at you. Therefore, verse 33, thus says the Lord concerning the king of Israel, he shall not come into the city or shoot an arrow there or come up before it with a shield or cast a siege mound against it. By the way that he came, by the same he shall return. He shall not come into this city, says the Lord. For I will defend this city to save it for my own sake and for the sake of my servant David. And the angel of the Lord went forth and slew 185,000 in the camp of the Assyrians. And the man rose early in the morning, and behold, they were all corpses. Simple solutions to complex problems. There's an invasion. What do you need? We need weapons. We need to defend ourselves. We need to fight. We need to spend more money on bombs. No. All of this to say that one thing. In our battling, where is our faith? In your life, where is the first place you put your trust? First place you put your trust. When there's a crisis, what's the first thing you turn to? I need more money. I need to strategize. In these battles of the three arenas we've been talking, with the self, with the world, in spiritual realities, what's our first thought? Oh, I need to fix myself. Therefore, I need a self-help book, a counselor, 14, subliminal tapes, and a new Franklin organizer. No. You need to get serious and play Hoover. I mean, sticking your nose in the carpet and like a vacuum, It's like,
oh, Lord.
Play Hoover. Stick your nose in the carpet, seek the Lord. In our battle with the world, the opposition to Christianity. Okay? Do we need more political clout? Do we need to go out and get the votes? Do we need to write letters? We need to play Hoover and look for a miracle. When you need money in your life, there's stress in your life, do you need to go scheme more? Do you need more credit? What do you need to do? Play Hoover. In our battle with spiritual reality, do we need to attend conferences, buy books, get more tapes, and attend more sermons? Read your Bible more. No. You need to play Hoover. You need to seek the Lord. I'm not saying that you can't do all these other things. Sure, it's good to have pragmatics. But pragmatics are simply token actions. Token actions. They're just things you do, oh yeah, and we do that too. They're not the first line. They're not your primary concern. Where do you run to when it all comes down? Where is your peace? What do you look to? Where is your strength? What do you look to? Where is your faith? Your faith will be shown in what you actually look to. That's what you trust. There's your faith. You can push the piano up the steps all you want, or you can take it in the front door. You can choose what you'll have faith in. We put faith in our effort to get this thing up the steps. Why don't you take the easy road? Put your faith in the thing that actually comes through. One answer, all problems. Very cool. Works much better. It's like the universal answer. Grab the fire extinguisher. Don't grab the kerosene. We do this much. I find that often our spirituality, and listen real closely, often our spirituality and our Christianity is relegated to the function of superstition. We believe in pragmatic actions. We believe that in order to move the kingdom forward, we have to strategize and scheme and get money and do advertising and do all these things. And we put our trust in those. In order to take our lives forward, we believe, I need education. I need, and you fill in the blank, I need more money. I need more skill. I need more whatever. Oh, and then I add a dash of Jesus as the token on the top. I just do the superstitious thing. I need to get married, therefore I need the sports car and the gym membership and the colored contact lenses. That's what I need. No. I'm lonely, therefore I need coffee. Ice cream. Chocolate. I need to go find a way to get this for myself. I need to go derive it. I need to go work it. No. Oh, and I'll put a sprinkling of Jesus on the top. Dom non obisco, Oreo, Nintendo, audio, video, fettuccine, Alfredo. Okay. Hibiscus. It's blessed. I blessed my relationship, but I made it happen. Okay. No. Turn it the other way around. It's not that you do a little dash of God on top. Kind of like, well, what do I need? I need to go get... Do we really put faith in those little garters that you catch at the weddings? I've caught 6 of them. I made tea out of them. I put soup. You know, I ground them up, stuck them... They don't work. You know? And often that's the attitude we take toward our Christianity. We say, oh, yeah, I'll do the praying thing, but it doesn't really work. I need to do something else that really works, and then I'll slather a little bit of prayer on top of it to put it in the right package. That is not real faith. Jesus says, if you have a little bit of real faith, you'll move mountains. But you have to live it that way. Not a sprinkling of God on top, it's God and a sprinkling of pragmatic action on top to say, well, you know, God has to have something to bless. Yeah, okay, we'll just get the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, no big deal. Like, okay, we prayed, God's going to cater for the wedding, but we got to get a hamburger for him to divvy up. Okay, here we go, here's the hamburger, it'll work. Where's our faith? Where's our faith? As we go through this series on spiritual conflict, when you battle, you need to have faith in the right place, not in the pragmatics, in the right place. We're going to talk about how to be spiritually strong next week. Let's pray. Lord, thank you today for challenging our faith in the pragmatics. And all the things in guitar strings and PA systems and the whole kit and caboodle. We ask, Lord, that you would clarify these things for the rest of our lives. Show us your power. We desire to look to you first as our primary thing. Meet us in this, we pray, God. In the name of Christ.